Welcome everyone to The Enthusiast Life. I am your host, Mark Turcotte. I'm so glad each and every one of you have decided to make me a part of your day. And welcome, my friends, once again to a Retro Game Club. That's right. We are here for our second Retro Game Club episode. And joining me here to do so, first up, Matt Clark. Matt, what's up, dude?
Hey, how's it going, Mark? Just grooving to some good SNES music here. Stoked to talk about the game.
Yes, today we are talking about Super Mario RPG, The Legend of the Seven Stars. We have lots of good conversation here coming up. And also joining us, as always, Kenz. Kenz, what's up, dude?
Going on? Yeah, it's been a lot of fun playing this. I'm stoked to get into it.
For sure. And finally, what we just found out is our professional gamer. We actually have a professional gamer here on this podcast, and none of us knew that. Neil, what's up, dude?
It's a me, Anelio. And yes, I am. I do have some experience as a pro gamer back in around year 2000. I was on a Canadian game show called Video and Arcade Top 10. I brought this up last week after we were talking about Mega Man because the theme song used for that game show is actually taken from Crash Man theme on Mega Man 2, I believe. It's a blatant ripoff. I doubt they paid anybody for it, but anyway.
I hope they did. It was on TV, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was on TV for sure.
Crazy.
Canadian television. So whatever that means to you guys. I don't know if it makes it
kind
way down
of there. Television, you know, not real television.
It's like public access here in the States.
Yeah. From the heart of Toronto. I got in a van with a bunch of my friends and one of them had tickets to be on it, and we were just going to come and be in the audience. But we showed up there, and we're like, okay, yeah, we'll cheer you on and all that stuff. And they had a bunch of people not show up, so they started picking from the audience, saying, hey, you want to play today? I'm like, yeah, I do. So the game I played was Wave Race 64. Blue Storm or something like that for the GameCube.
In my head, I kept picturing it was the 64.
No, yeah, so this was pretty late in the show. Okay. This show started, it was like NES and Game Boy. So it had been going on for 10 years or something like that. So it was pretty late in the show's life. I don't think they made it past the GameCube. It shut down like 2002 or something like that, I think. But anyway, so I ended up playing there. At the beginning, they kind of put you in a room, get you a little warmed up with the game. So I was in a room with like eight people passing the controller back and forth. They're like telling you how it works and all that stuff. But
germs.
Was this live? Yeah. Was the show live or was it like
pre-recorded? No, it was recorded. Okay. Yeah. So they recorded like a bunch of episodes. We were there for most of the day. And I was on an episode and then like each of us were on different episodes, the five or six of us that went there. And so yeah, I ended up playing. You go through the first stage and it's like best time wins or something like that, and then you just kind of keep playing because they got a lot to talk about after you do your first race, so you're just kind of bumping around. You don't really know what goes on, but I ended up coming in second place, and my big prize was a trip to Medieval Times. So
nice.
We've got one of those in Toronto here. You guys said that
we're aware
and you're aware of. So that was amazing. That was almost as cool as being on the TV show, I'll tell you that much. Getting the big chicken leg and stuff like that. But one of my friends
chicken leg?
Turkey leg? Turkey leg?
I was just making sure. Okay. How big are chickens in Canada?
Chicken balls?
Chicken balls? Any chicken balls? Yeah, those are real. I had some of those this week. So my friend was also playing it and he beat me. And so he won. You win the game, I think you play. So if you didn't have GameCube, you're kind of screwed.
I was going to say, what if you don't have the system? It's like, oh, yay.
Nope. So I don't think he did have one, but anyway,
I really wish I had a system to go with this game.
Yeah. Jeez. So that was my foray into pro gaming.
Wow.
And second place. That's I peaked.
Now, if you let me ask a question here to everybody, if you guys had a choice to be on a TV show and play one game to compete in, what would your game be?
We're talking about that same era. It's certainly Halo.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. Like, probably the only game that I think I've ever actually been good at in my life.
Did you do any outside of your friend group play against them?
No, just
you never really know, though.
Good old LAN parties.
Yep.
I was in band, and like we had a massive band at my school, and we would do these LAN parties where the band director would come and he would facilitate Halo LAN parties, and it was nice. Awesome.
What did you play, Kins?
Percussion.
Okay, played drums. That tracks. That makes sense. Yeah, you're definitely a percussion kid. Okay. I didn't. This is around like the time where I wasn't gaming, so I'm not super familiar with the games at the time. But if I had to be, and I think I brought this up with you guys before, if I had to be like on any type of game show, it would have been Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego, you know, competing and doing stuff like that. So
that's you guys remember Nick Arcade?
No. Vaguely.
Like, because that was a show, like, I mean, I watched it as a kid, and of course, me being a little bit older than you guys, it might have been off the air by that point, but it was kind of similar to the show you're talking about, you know, where they would play games, but all the games they played weren't usually, like, actual video games that you knew of. Like, they basically tried to make it like, this isn't a Nintendo game, but it's kind of like a Nintendo game. But then at the very end, whoever won, like, the final thing, it was always teams, I think, they had to do, like, a green screen video game, so it looked like the people were in the game, but it was like one of those dumb games where you're just like, go, you know, it looks like you're climbing up a ladder, then they just would like put their hand out like punching things, and I mean it was terrible, but like as a kid it was like, oh my god, like I want to so be in that game, that's so cool, I want to do
watching
that.
It now, and there have been memories that have been unlocked this I definitely watched this.
I have to say, if I was to actually compete, my game would be Mario Golf for the N64.
Wow.
I played so much of that game, and I would play with my friends, and we'd be up very late playing. I'd fall asleep in between turns. They wake me up. They're like, go, Neil. I'd be like, okay, yeah. Boom, boom, boom. You know, eagle, birdie, eagle. They're like, how does he do this? He's half asleep. So that's awesome. I would compete in Mario Golf 64.
That seems like such a left field from these types of games. Like RPGs, action, you know, Halo, all this stuff. And then like golf. And correct me if I'm wrong, Kans, you said you were like a big tennis game.
False.
Did somebody here say false tennis?
Not me.
Nope, not me.
Maybe last week or something like that. I don't know.
Mario Tennis is a great game.
Virtual Tennis was good on the Dreamcast. I like that.
Maybe that's what it was.
N64 version too.
I think for me, if I had to pick a game at that time, it probably would have been literally just like either Super Mario Brothers, World 1-1, or like Mario 3, like just straight up back to the Wizard. Have you guys seen The Wizard?
Yes.
Like the end of that, just as a kid, just captivated me. So like speedrunning Mario levels, or even like Sonic 2. I used to have all my friends over, and we would run like Sonic 2 levels and see who could get through them like the quickest with the most rings at the end. And so like at that time, that was like the competitive gaming, I guess, that I kind of enjoyed. It was like running through platform games like that.
I think they did have it. It was like head-to-head Sonic, and you can have split screen.
They did, two definitely did. Yeah, you would be one Sonic and one Tails, and it was split screen, but you were on the same map. So you would run past each other. You would see each other kind of run past, which at the time was kind of crazy that the game was able to, I guess, kind of render the level twice. Like those systems back then weren't that great at doing that, but... Well, what's up, everybody? Here for tuning into the show. You know, like I said, we are here. Oh, we are going to talk about some Super Mario RPG, The Legend of the Seven Stars. But quick little housekeeping here before we get going. Next week, we will not be having an episode of Retro Game Club. However, I will be doing a special episode with some good friends here to the show. We're going to be talking about Star Wars Unlimited card game. That will be next Friday. And then the Friday after that, we're actually taking that Friday off completely. So I may not even be putting out an episode that Friday, but we will be back on the 31st, Friday the 31st, and we will be talking about The Legend of Zelda, the Minish Cap for the GBA. So we were originally thinking maybe, you know, Link to the Past, but I know, like, especially Kens and I have played that game tons of times, a lot. And so I personally have only played a little bit of Minish Cap. I never actually played much of it. So I think jumping into a new Zelda game will be pretty awesome. And that gives us a lot of time to kind of get through it, which we were kind of laughing this week. I mean, we gave ourselves 1 week to play through a full RPG, and I mean, I'm just gonna admit I didn't finish it this week. So, but
I mean, halfway, I think.
I mean, that's not the whole point of the show, right? The whole point is just kind of go back to these games, revisit them, look at the mechanics, and all that. So, But we will be talking about it, of course, in depth here in a minute. But yeah, so if you want to be a part of the next Retro Game Club and you want to kind of be in the conversation, it will be The Legend of Zelda, The Minish Cap on the Game Boy Advance. And that will be coming out on the 31st of May. So, all right, let's jump in here, guys. Super Mario RPG. This game was released in Japan on March 9th, 1996. In North America, May 13th, 1996. Of course, on the Super Famicom. This was kind of what towards the end, if not literally at the end of the Super of the SNES's life. I mean, I think the what the 64 came out
later that year.
Yeah, right, November, 96. December of 96.
Yep.
I remember as a kid seeing a lot, and we have up in the archive the Nintendo Power that has kind of the spread on this game. And I remember, I think at the time, a friend had Final Fantasy III, which of course is Final Fantasy VI, was out by this point. And I didn't have it, but I would go over his house and watch him play an RPG. And that was kind of, I mean, I played the original Final Fantasy, but I never really got into it. I even think I played like Dragon Warrior on the NES, which of course is Dragon Quest. But was never really deep into like a turn-based RPG. So when I saw this, I was like, this is it. Like, this is, you know, those games, those turn-based games, but it's Mario, who I love, and this is kind of this perfect combination of both. And I want to say when this game came out, it was, because that's the thing, gamers now today talk about the price of video games being so expensive. I think this game was like $90 when it came out. Like, games in the like years past, the prices were all over the place. Like, a game wouldn't come out and it was just $50 or $60. This game, I mean, we can look it up here while we're talking, but I want to say it probably retailed at like $90 when it came out. So I remember like not being able to get it right when it came out because it just cost so much money at the time. I was like, I can't, you know, I'm used to buying, saving up my money and getting a game for $50. Like, what? I basically got to pay like twice to get this video game. But I do remember getting it at some point, and it wasn't a rental. I actually physically own this cartridge, and loving every minute of it. Like, I never finished it as a kid, because I think back then I was more of the mindset of not understanding, like, you can grind a little bit in these games and, like, power yourself up. I think I just didn't really comprehend. You know, I just wanted more of the fast action. Like, I just want to move through this forest or this sewer and get through here and just move on to the next enemy. Where in this game, I don't want to say it's easy, because it's not. I mean, you definitely can get to fights where you can get owned if you're not buying items and things like that. But you do got to grind a little bit in the game. You know, you got to make sure you're kind of keeping on top of things and keeping yourself kind of at pace with the enemies. And I think I got Bowser in my party, and that was kind of like the end for me, for where I stopped, like, as a kid. But I want to throw it to you, Neil.
That's a huge moment, Bowser in your party. Spoilers. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, It's in the commercial, I'm pretty sure. But,
and I think if you're listening to this, spoilers, any of these Retro Game Club episodes, like, spoiler alert on all of these. But Neil, you said this is in your top three. So yep. I need to hear the Great story game. Of what puts this in your top three. What's your history with Super Mario RPG?
Similar to you, it was like my first RPG. I, you know, played a lot, and I might have watched my brother play Final Fantasy III a little bit, but like that was a little bit too much for me. Like, I wasn't at that point yet in my pro gaming life. So I played through the beginning of that many times, up to like a part where I think it was you're on the raft and there's a boss there and you have to... anyway, so I didn't make it very far in Final Fantasy III, which is six in the real world. But... this is a game that I could, you know, get through and follow along. Like, it definitely was more accessible for the younger kids and everybody, right? You didn't have to go super hard into customizing your equipment. It was just like, you got to the town, you went to the shop, all the stats were better, you bought what that was, you know? So it wasn't like customizing any of that or worrying about that. The timing was really fun too. It made the battles great, trying to master. And then when you would change the weapon and the timing would change on all that and all of your spells, it would change too. So I love that. And I'd rented this game a lot. When I could, and the first time I actually beat the game was from another save on the cartridge. I just kind of opened up a save that wasn't there. It was like the last one before the boss, and I went through it, and I'm like, whoa, this is crazy. It's wild. So I did, to the end.
Real quick, dude, I got to stop you there. Like, that's something that you just mentioned that, and like, I remember as a kid, like, going, doing that. Like, not in this game, but like any other, like, there were so many games that had like those save states on them. Do you guys remember that? Like, renting a game, and like, I mean, you obviously do, Neil, just saying that, but like, you fire up and there's a save state in there, and it's like the person is way further than you ever made it, and you're seeing enemies, like loot, whatever it is, you know, just so much further in the game. I used to love that in a video game whenever you'd rent it and get that.
Yeah, Ocarina of Time is another one I remember, and it's like, how did Link get so big? What's going on here? Why is the castle all torn apart and there's zombies everywhere? What the heck happens in this game? But yeah, that was an advantage of, you know, sharing games and, you know, renting games that we've kind of lost now. Now it's like, okay, buy it for full price so you can try it out. And it's like, oh, I didn't really like the game. Oh, well, you bought it. You played it for too long. You can't return it or anything. So that's something I miss, is the renting the game. But so yeah, the first time I beat it, you know, was, you know, not the traditional way, but I did that, but I still went back to it and ended up going through it many times over the years. I did end up getting the cartridge at one point. I don't remember if I bought it or, you know, got it from somebody, but I don't have it anymore, so I passed it along at some point. But love this game. I've played it I come back to it. Similar to Mega Man X, whenever I get an emulation going, this is another ROM that I, you know, legally acquire and play some of whenever I download those and get those going for the SNES. I did buy the remake that released last year. I think it was last October sometime. Yeah, and so I played through most of it at that point. And this week I just picked up where I left off there. And I think I've got 5 stars, so I'm like getting close to the end. Nice. I was trying to finish it off this week, but it didn't work out. So I like what they did with the remake. There's a lot of fun changes. The graphics look amazing too, but honestly, the original graphics look great as well. As you said, it was late in the SNES, and it shows they're really nice models, you know, it's 3D rendering, but it's not like first generation N64 and PlayStation 1 3D rendering. Yeah. It's like a lot nicer to look at.
Well, I think that's one of the cool things they did with it, was they used the same engine or the same technology that they used for Donkey Kong Country.
Right.
So if you think Donkey Kong Country had those 3D sprites kind of in the game, and that's what they used within this, which there was only a couple games on the Super Nintendo that did that. I think it was this, Donkey Kong Country, and Killer Instinct. I think that came out when they put the console version out. I think did that as well. But I mean, as you know, when you're younger and you see that, it was like, oh man, these things look so cool. They look so good. And then, you know, little did we know, a year later, our minds would be blown with Mario 64. But
And part of that goes to the technology used in like the cartridge at the time, because it was a specific chip that was already in the SNES that they ended up putting an extra one in the cartridge itself, so that it had like double the RAM and processing power, because all the graphics were preloaded on the cartridge instead of, that sounds stupid because of course they'd come preloaded on the cartridge, but it was,
we know what you mean.
It was, you know, it's, it was final, not having,
we went above and beyond for it in the cartridge.
And I wonder if that's what kind of contributed to the higher cost, but also
I'm sure it did.
Also because this was like the love child of Nintendo and Square, and that was just kind of like, you know, the two big artists of the time coming together for this mega collab and being like, we can charge whatever we want.
Well, that's what was interesting. It was like, you know, Nintendo wanting to broaden the player base for Mario, which at the time, it's like, come on, Mario was like Mickey Mouse at the time. You know, like, people knew who Mario was, but they still wanted to expand what Mario could be. And then Square saying like, all right, well, we have our Final Fantasy series and we're, you know, we love doing this, but we want to appeal to a newer audience, maybe players who have not played those games. And so it was just like, okay, well, why don't we come together and do this? And I'm trying to think, like, how many other instances has this happened kind of in the video game industry where you have these two big game companies come together. Like, can you guys think of another example of this where we've had, like, maybe of recent years? I mean, I'm sure there is one. And so if you're out there and you're hearing this and you know one, definitely message us and let us know. But I can't really put together, you know, I'm just trying to think. Like, you know, there's been companies that have, you know, published games for other studios, but there's never been like, hey, let's take a mascot from this company and put it into our gameplay system and, you know, there you go. Like, I just can't, I don't know.
Yeah, they're actively working together. And maybe the, like, the first thing that comes to mind is, like, the Mario Rabbit games. Like, the...
Yeah.
Because it's, like, those are that... Because, but again, that's, like, a totally different type of Mario game. You know, they've just taken Mario and put him into, you know, this...
Right. And even for rabbits, because, you know, that's, like, totally different than the other rabbits. Most of those rabbits games were all, like, minigame collections that were just all wacky. Yeah. So, huh.
Like, Nintendo and Ubisoft working together to kind of make something like that.
What about you, Ken? Did you play this at all when you were younger?
No. Yeah. So, like I said last time, I was mainly console until Nintendo 64. But when I had, you know, I had not really played a lot of RPGs outside of Pokemon. You know, I had seen Final Fantasy and stuff, and was aware of kind of like what it was. But I remember thinking, like, this is too overwhelming for me. And I can even remember, like, thinking of the term RPG and thinking, like, I don't want to play a game like that. Like, I don't want to play an RPG. Like, that's too much for me to think about. And now, like, every game has some sort of, like, RPG element, it seems like, which is wild. But, you know, like, that was just such a genre. And but playing really the successor to this game, which was Paper Mario. And so that and what I've I because I'd never played Super Mario RPG until this week. And so it was cool to see those comparisons. And with Paper Mario, the thing that really kind of pulled me in and what I could see pulling people into this game is the story of it. And because to me, I was aware of Mario, but it didn't seem to be like, what's the Mario lore, you know, like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And this and that, the Paper Mario games and Super Mario RPG really get into just the Mushroom Kingdom and the different, you know, all the characters. And before that, you know, you don't get that with all the side scrolling games. And there was there's a game that I played on Game Boy. It's probably Game Boy Advance, I think, but it was like the Mario and Luigi game.
Those games are great.
Which was another
Superstar Saga and all that.
Yeah, RPG similar successor to this. And that was the same thing, like lots of story, lots of dialogue, you know, character progression and stuff like that, which is just not something that you saw initially in a Mario game. So
I believe it's the same directors that did this game ended up starting the Mario Luigi. They started that company that made those games.
Makes sense.
So those are all also awesome games. I didn't dive into those too much, but I really enjoyed that Mario Luigi and Paper Mario. That was good too.
I mean, one of the things that this game, I think, you know, moving forward in really many other RPGs and even up to the point where there was literally a pretty big RPG that came out last year that used the mechanic of the active combat. You mentioned it, Neil, about how much fun it is. You know, you that timing based. I don't know if you guys played Sea of Stars last year, which is on Game Pass, which is incredible, dude. Like, such a great RPG. If you haven't played Sea of Stars, it's awesome. It's on, I think, pretty much every platform. It's on Game Pass. Go play that game. It's awesome.
I had that thought this week. I was like, man, what can I play now? You know, that's
gonna give you the same thing. If you liked
Sea of Stars.
I'm telling you, it's Sea of Stars. It is so good. Like, and that's one of the best parts about it is, you know, most RPGs, it's, you think about, like, just the combat pre-Super Mario RPG. And yes, there's obviously been tons of RPGs after that that don't do the active combat. But when you can find one that does, and it makes it where the timing base of hitting that button at the right time to either attack or defend, it just adds an element of gameplay to it that isn't just, you know, attack and you just sit there and watch. You know, you're actually being a part of the combat. And it just makes it so much more fun. And
it's like what you thought you were doing when you were playing Pokemon, hitting B, 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 B,
B, B,
or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I'm going to catch him if I
do that.
Damn this button.
I still do that to this day playing Pokemon games.
Yeah.
I was really interested in kind of like the all those games you brought up, the Mario and Luigi, Paper Mario, and why they were so similar. And I guess it was just because of this big falling out between Nintendo and Square after this game came out. Because, of course, you know, Square went on to become Square Enix and, you know, create these massively amazing Final Fantasy games on disc, you know, aligning with PlayStation, whereas, you know, Nintendo stayed cartridge-based, eventually going on to GameCube and stuff. And even now, like, to Switch. And not because I guess they couldn't handle the development or they didn't want to innovate, because they did end up innovating, but I guess just the ideas that Square had wouldn't have fit on that cartridge.
Yeah, I mean, it literally was Final Fantasy VII. Like, it was originally going to be...
Yeah. Which was my first RPG.
On, I think it was the 64, I think it was originally going to be on, like, was the plan. But then, of course, when Nintendo said we're not moving on from cartridges, Square was like, well, you know, we have these ideas of this massive game. It is not going to fit on your cartridge. And they made the jump.
What, 3 discs, right?
Yeah. It's crazy.
It took.
Yep.
Yeah, it's too bad. Well, Matt, I have to ask. Did you get through the introduction on this one?
Yes, I got through the introduction. Why would you
say
that?
It's tricky, though. It's tricky. It took me a long time to first.
I died a lot.
Let me be completely honest. I played this on Delta. So I utilized Save State like it was going out of style.
I would like to say we got a message from you middle of the week, Matt, that said, wow, you guys are right. Save State is great. Or something like that.
It was revolutionary. Yeah. Who would have thought?
I was like, huh? This would have made Mega Man so much easier. And it was there. I just didn't know what it was. But yeah, and I loved Mega Man, but I think the gameplay was a lot more fun. Even though they're two completely different types of games, right? And maybe it just comes from having that ability to choose as part of an RPG. Who do you want in your party? How do you want to handle your upgrades?
Strategy.
What abilities do you want to use? Things like that. Like the does the combat system have like a name? Because, you know, just like the time based system, I guess, or whatever.
Turn based, yeah.
Like
or active combat, maybe of some kind.
And with
turn-based active combat, maybe?
You know, being able to like hit harder or mitigate damage based on what
yes, like, that was cool too.
It
both
just,
ways,
just like it tickled my brain in the right way, where I felt like I was Jason Statham in Crank, playing Mega Man X, like trying to find like the thing that would keep my heart going, or I was gonna die. But yeah. I thought it was super fun. I loved the characters, loved the comedy of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
The writing was so great. That's often my stickler for games. It's like, you can have a great looking game, but if the story and the writing aren't on par, like, nobody's going to want to play it. And I think that's probably what I think endeared people to this game a lot, is that it wasn't just another soulless game. But it was Mario, and it had heart, and it had humor, which I don't, correct me if I'm wrong, like, I don't think we'd had much of in the Mario franchise up to this point.
No, the only thing we had really was, by this point, you had the Super Mario Brothers Super Show, so you had the cartoon that really brought in kind of the comedy and that of those characters and kind of really set the personalities for them that would kind of move forward, and then we had the terrible live action movie that literally had nothing to do. Everybody forgets about objective. John Leguizamo is Luigi, just crazy, right?
That's
Dennis Hopper is
objective, Koopa. I guess.
So, you know, I almost wonder how much of the cartoon kind of set the stage for some of the comedy writing that appears in here. Because, yeah, Mario 1, Mario 2, Mario 3, none of that is
No text.
There's no story.
All action.
Yeah, it's just not.
Reading some interviews with some translated interviews with the game's director, they also said that the staff was also really obsessed with stand-up comedy at the time, which I think is an interesting inspiration to draw from when writing for Mario. But hey, it worked out. So
it worked.
Now the other comedy.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say the other interesting kind of gameplay mechanic they put in here, and it's not really a mechanic; it's more of the input system, if you want to say, is just the four buttons being like attack, defend, item, and what spell special. Or special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and special. So, rather than like in most games where you kind of are going through a menu, this going up and down and pressing A on okay attack, pick your attack or special. This literally was. You know, B is your what runaway, X is your items, Y are your specials, and A is your attacks. And so it took me a little while, I don't know about you guys, it took me a little while to get used to that because I kept trying to like, I would hit like Y for my special. And then when I go into the menu, because then you can pick like your different spells or whatever you want to say, I would pick the one I wanted, but then I would a lot of times press A. And then it would go over to attack rather than do the special. Yeah, it's like, oh no, I got to keep hitting Y because I'm in my special menu.
Do that.
Like, dang it.
In the remake, they made it so as by default, that is actually how it works. You hit Y to get to the menu and then A to accept it. But luckily, they also put it back to the original way setting. So I had to go back to that because I kept messing up. And I'd be like, why? Oh, why isn't Y working? Oh, well, I got to hit A, I guess. Okay, I guess. So I changed it back. So why to confirm, why to do the, you know, extra active battle ability during your attack as well. So, yeah, that was a very interesting thing. And part of that is you guys make it to the forest boss.
Yeah.
The guy that runs
the
away.
Arrow. The bow and arrow guy, he like bends his body guy. And shoots an arrow.
Yep, and halfway through the battle, he throws your controller buttons down on the battlefield. He shoots an arrow that disables that button. You could disable your special, disable your items, disable your attacks, and then none of your characters can use that button until he picks another one or you defeat him or something like that. Like that was that's a cool way to make that that.
And I would want to know.
That do that too.
I would want to know where did that come from? Like that idea to me, that sounds like a Miyamoto, Shigeru Miyamoto, the creator of Mario, the guy's created, you know, how many just countless incredible Nintendo games. That to me, that boss fight sounds like a Miyamoto type boss fight. I mean, looking at the credits for the game, he was a producer on the game, just producer Shigeru Miyamoto. I don't know what it is. I stuff like that. I just feel he would come up with like those gameplay moments. Like that. I don't know. Maybe that's just me kind of thinking, just loving that's Miyamoto, pretty neat. But like that's so unique, right? There, you wouldn't have game. It's almost like breaking the fourth wall, like of a video game doing that. Like up to this point, most video games, especially console games, didn't do that. And this game just jumped right into it. It's very, very cool that they were able to do that. You mentioned that, I think, about the omnidirectional, or somebody mentioned that, like how you could move in the kind of the eight different directions rather than just the four. That was unique, too, to kind of have a RPG that allows you to move kind of diagonally. But you were also in this isometric viewpoint, which was a viewpoint that you didn't see too often on consoles. I mean, a lot of times that was like PC games that you would see that in, not necessarily console games at the time. So to throw that into an RPG and then allow you to do that. And then there's literally platforming parts in the game where you're going through, like there's that one part, what it is in the forest where you're in, and there's like these, you step on a block and another block starts going around and you can jump on it by jumping off onto the next block. It kind of stops it in that point. But you can move diagonally and all that, which was not something that games at this time are really doing too much. We're just used to going 2D left to right, so I thought that was kind of cool. But Kenz, you said you had an issue using the Delta emulator, I think, with that.
It was so I use the Backbone controller with my phone, and so but it's like if you like trying to use that directional movement with just like the touchpad on your phone, you know, like touchscreen,
like I did,
it just wouldn't you know, because there would be times whenever I would want to play and I wouldn't have like my Backbone controller to slap onto it. And so I would have to play without it. And if I was in one of those platforming situations where I didn't have to go left, right, up, or down, it was really hard to kind of get my thumb in that place on the touchscreen to go diagonally and then press the jump button at the same time. So it just was kind of wonky. Just trying to play Mega Man like that too was virtually impossible. And so, you know, having the joystick is makes a world of a difference sometimes. but one thing that really that I noticed, and I could be wrong about this if other games do it, but because really my only experience with RPGs up to this point was Pokemon and Final Fantasy, but being able to kind of like go around enemies in the world instead of it being completely random encounters is not something that I can't think of a game that did that until like Final Fantasy 12.
Chrono Trigger.
Did Chrono Trigger do it that way too? Yeah. I haven't played Chrono Trigger. So I just thought that was cool that you are faced with choices of like, I don't have to fight this enemy if I can somehow jump over them and find a way to get around them and, you know, get to the next place. So
a cool way that they integrated that was when you get stars on the overworld or like in the map, you just run into the guys. It's like you finish the battle, you win, you don't lose any hit points. And that's a nice way to level up too.
Yeah. Like I mentioned, when I was a kid having problems with the game where I would kind of hit that wall was doing exactly what you said, Kenz, was like in my mind, the gamer I was then was just like, just get through this game, just run through it, get as quick. So I was trying to avoid as many battles as I could. But in the end, like that ultimately hurts you, obviously, in any RPG. So for me this time playing it, I was just fighting everybody. I was just like, whatever, man, I'm just going to keep going. Because the other thing the game does as well is sometimes when you kind of, and I don't know if it's just based off when you get that timing right, but sometimes it'll give you like a little power up. It'll say like HP max or do it again and you get to like attack again. So it's like, you know, I would go in and be like, oh man, I only have like 2 mushrooms to heal when I would go into a new area. But it's like, you know what? If I just keep battling, I'm going to find them and the game's going to do that. It's going to give me power-ups as I'm just battling. So I was just kind of fighting everybody. So personally, this run through or to where I got to, I don't even think I died. Like, I know, Kenz, you said you were dying all the time. I don't even think I died once. None of the bosses, I just smoked everybody. I just, like,
a little dinosaur guy at the beginning was dominating me. but I was underleveled, and I didn't have any items, and I eventually got the firepower and was able to blow through.
Yeah, Tenshism.
Yeah. And I don't think I really died much after that, up until I got to the cake boss, which was in the... And did you guys wedding? Make it to the wedding?
See, I didn't get to that this time.
There's a giant cake that you have to fight, and that killed me earlier, but I think I beat it the second time.
Let's talk about some of the characters that get introduced in this. And obviously, you know, Mario, Bowser, all these characters we know. But there's characters in this game who, do we ever see them again in anything? Like, have we ever seen everyone's favorite tadpole? Spoiler alert, he's not a tadpole. Mallow, like, do we ever see him again in anything?
That's kind of a shame. Surprising with, like, how Nintendo brings all of their characters together, you know?
So sassy, too. Like,
I wonder if it's, like, a Square thing. Does, like, Square own the rights to those
characters? I think they both do, so they both have to agree to use it in something else.
That's why... We got Mario Paper because they couldn't do an outright sequel to this.
Right.
Because
Square
has, I think, actually the majority of rights.
Because they did most of the development. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. So, yeah, we didn't see Mallow. The other one was Gino, the doll guy. He's all like over the internet. Everybody's favorite.
I don't even really know what he is because I haven't played the remake. And I'm playing it on my phone, and so I mean, it's looking at the graphics, like I can't tell what this character is.
Yeah, he looks weird. His look.
Kind of like it's Pinocchio-ish.
His looks better in the original compared because you can't really tell what he is, and that's what he looks like to me. Like that's my Gino, you know. But He's a puppet that you're playing with before the forest part we were talking about.
Yeah.
And he's actually like possessed by a star keeper kind of thing and grows big and whatever. So the star flies around while Mario's sleeping, or he gets knocked out because he's playing dolls with the little kid in the inn or whatever it is. And the star keeper possesses Gino and makes him big, and he turns him to a character, and he kind of tells you, he's like, my name is blah 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 gibberish, it's just like some characters, but you can't pronounce that because it's in star language, so you just call me Gino, which is like the doll's name. But he never showed up either, but he did come into Super Smash Bros. Ultimate like a couple years ago as just a Mii costume, so that was the only other time that he's been in any games. But he's a pretty cool character, too. Like, he's a great attacker. He's got some sweet spells, especially near the end of the game. He keeps getting, like, giant star, clear the whole screen, sunburst, super spells. So he's pretty cool, too.
Could you imagine what, like, another, I don't know, team-up of Square and Nintendo to do a new one, like Super Mario RPG 2 and, you know, use the or put the graphics on the level of like the Mario movie, so it's looking real, and then you pull in like the way Square went into like summons and that in Final Fantasy. So imagine, like you just mentioned, like the big star clearing screen like you would see in like a Final Fantasy game, how you know you have the big summon come in and you know like Bahamut or whatever coming down the screen, but yet it's like a huge turtle shell or whatever it is like crashing down on the screen. Like that would be
say that because amazing. I'm looking at a list right now of Super Mario RPG characters and Bahamut is on this list. I don't know why. Is Bahamut in this video game?
He's a I think one of the enemies are named after him.
Okay.
So he's one of the enemies.
That's not why I pulled that name, but you know what I mean.
I would want like Kingdom Hearts, but Mario.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. It would be like a Kingdom Hearts thing, right?
Which is a great link to bring up because the composer for this game, what's her name? Yoko Shimomura is the same composer who did the music for Kingdom Hearts. This was like
the music is so good too.
She says this game is the game that like changed the trajectory of her career. She later went and did music with the directors and producers of this game, you know, to do like Mario and Luigi and those other games. But she said this was like the turning point. And then like the iconic music from Kingdom Hearts, like, come on. And I'm listening to the soundtrack as we speak like right now. Neil sent it to me and it was
so good. Like, I would sing this out in the playground. The Toad Town, whatever. We'd be like, let's dueling banjos at dawn. And my friends would just be like fooling around playing with that because
the battle music was stuck in my head.
So good.
Runs back into class at the end of recess.
Yeah. But back to the star power stuff. In the remake, they actually have a new functionality during the battles. So if you do enough timed attacks and do it perfectly, you build up a star gauge, and then once you get 100% star gauge, it's like a limit break kind of thing in the Final Fantasy games. And depending on your party configuration, each party configuration has a specific star move or whatever. It's like a one-time thing. You hit select and then it goes to like this cutscene where one of them I do is, well, I play a lot with Bowser because he's amazing, and Princess Peach, classic, right? So Mario jumps up, Bowser jumps up, Mario does like a Mario Strikers kick on Bowser, and then Princess Peach throws a star at Bowser or something like that. So then Bowser just runs into the middle of the battlefield and explodes as like a star shell thing. Or you get Bowser's clown car for one of them too. I forget, that might be with Mallow or something like that. And they all hop in the clown car. Mario's throwing fireballs. Bowser's like shooting bullet bills and stuff like that. So they do have some cool things like that that they put in with the remake recently.
So cool. It's like X-Men team up moves in your
Yeah,
mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah, I thought about that. Or the Marvel ones like from our RPG. They're thinking about those.
I'm looking at this Nintendo Power quick little blurb they have on the game, of course, before the game came out. And the I love the line. It just says, not your father's RPG. Like, when they announced this, it was so bonkers. Like, just the idea of a Mario role-playing game. And it's just still to this day, like, still so crazy. But yet, it came out so good and it works. And like we said, I mean, it launched the series of, you know, Mario and Luigi and even Paper Mario, which is, it's crazy.
Sidetrack, if you keep going a couple pages over, there's this pull-out poster for a sick Marvel game that I've never played before, War of the Gems.
Mm.
Oh, nice.
I think there's I've tried that in an emulator before.
That's all.
Was it a fighting game?
No, I think it's like a action arcade.
I don't know.
Type. Maybe not a brawler, I don't remember. But Mario RPG was in the Nintendo magazine a few different issues. I think it was also, I'm trying to flip through it now. It's also in the next issue, April 96, issue 83, page 62, where they have more of a write-up on it showing you the different... This is amazing. They show you a couple of the bosses you're going through and some of the story. They've got, yeah, a bunch of pages there. But I think, like, the story, as you guys said, the game starts off typical Mario fashion. Princess Peach gets kidnapped by Bowser. Mario goes to the castle, and you've started the intro mission, right? Okay, you're as Mario. You're going through the castle. You're fighting some dry Koopas or whatever they are, and you get up to Bowser and you're fighting Bowser, and then, you know, the story actually starts. You get the title screen because a giant star or a giant sword falls from the sky, takes over Bowser's castle, makes you fly away, and then you go through the whole thing. You're collecting these stars to rebuild the Star Road because that's how wishes can come true, right? And part of that, you're traveling all around the Mario universe, going to the different lands. So we saw this a little bit in Super Mario World. You got to see, like, the forest and stuff like that. But here you get to go, you know, you go to the forest, you go to the Mole People Hill, you're going in, like, a mine cart kind of thing. You're going to different cities. Later in the game, you get to see where Mallow's from. There's a little advance. He's not from Tadpole Pond, spoiler, but you get to see a lot of cool different places. And later on in the game too, they bring out, like, the Genju Force or whatever it is, and Matt, you'd like these guys. It's basically like Power Ranger ripoffs that you fight near the end of the game.
Yeah,
very cool.
That was probably one of the Game Boy games that had most Mighty Morphin Power Rangers the Fighting Edition.
But oh yeah, like the Mortal Kombat kind of game.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I think one of the, you know, just kind of looking at where the story goes, and you're kind of saying that, Neil, of them just kind of following the path to all those different worlds. Again, was just that inspiration of, you know, Mario. I think that was one of the things that Miyamoto, and it was a quote. There was a video I watched. It was like a 20 or 30 minute video, kind of all about the game and that. And that was, like, one of the goals was, yes, we want to expand the audience, but we need to make sure that it stays Mario. And, mm-hmm. You know, if you had to, like, they had to have a meeting at some point to, like, boil down, like, okay, what makes Mario Mario? And, okay, it's going all these different places, you know, different settings, if you want to say. It had to be, you know, the different, well, at the time, I guess, when you were playing on the NES, it wasn't necessarily different bosses, because, I mean, yes, you were fighting the different Koopa kids, if you want to say, kind of like Mario 3 and all that, but it wasn't like these really outlandish bosses, but it was the enemies, right? All the different types of enemies that you're fighting. And, yeah, they were just able to kind of layer it all in here, and that's, I don't know, this game, to me, going back to it this time, you really can appreciate, I think, a lot of what's there. You know, some games you go back to and they're just kind of like throw away, like, eh. But this game, you can really see why there have been fans like you, Neil, who have just, like, held it up for years and years and years and always look at this game as, you know, just something that was, I don't know. What do you want to call it? Not that it's an anomaly, but it was just some. There aren't a lot of games like this. You know, no. There were so many role-playing games that would come out that would get kind of forgotten and tossed by the wayside. I mean, the Super Nintendo had a lot of role-playing games, but, right. you know, only Top a handful down. Only a handful have always kind of stayed up there as, you know, cream of the crop.
It's like an outlet, not like an outlier, but like almost a disruptor because, you know, at the end of the SNES, like, it could have easily gone underneath the radar with N64 coming out.
Right.
Yep.
But the fact that it stood the test of time, and even with the remake treatment, is like, it just goes to speak for it.
Yeah. Mixed between, you know, RPG turn-based battle, but then you do have the platforming in it and being able to avoid the enemies, like we said too, like that's part of it. And some of the platforming sections are pretty difficult. I was hitting my head against the wall in this part in the sky area, getting up to the sky area, trying to do your climbing, like Jack and the Beanstalk kind of thing, getting to the cloud world. And there's this jump I was trying to make forever from vine to vine. I was trying to make this jump. The whole thing is you're holding down and left because that's the direction where the next vine is. And you would grab onto the vine, but then you would also be holding down at the same time. So you would jump, it would be right at the bottom of the vine and you fall off the vine. I ended up having to look it up, and there was a platform that was hidden that I had to reveal by jumping in a certain place to jump on top of. And so, but it seemed like I could make it if I had the exact button presses, but it ended up that it was a lot easier than that. I found what's that?
Oh, sorry, I didn't realize you could sprint until much later.
Yeah.
That helps a lot with the platforming.
Yeah, which is so a unique challenge on a phone.
Because right. You can't just...
You're going one direction, then all of a sudden, like, you breathe different, and you're, like, going in there. Oh, I just ran into a huge enemy.
Mm-hmm.
I like the one, you know, they do little things where, like, the one time when you go down the river... And, you know, he's kind of falling, like,
mini games.
Yeah, these little mini games. And you're on the barrel and you're jumping to get the coins and all that. Like, it's cool how they just do these little action.
One that goes up a mountain. One bits. Where you're, like, in a mine cart. It's almost looks like Mario Kart, like Super Mario Kart. But you're in a mine cart and you have to steer it. And I thought that was really cool. Every big world seems to end. Is that how it works, Neil? Or, like...
I think so. I think... The later half doesn't have as many of them, but they do have one in each kind of world area up until the minecart, I think, might be the last one. But it's a lot of fun, those little mini games. They also had a cool thing in the Tadpole Pond where you can kind of, it's like a musical staff. And I don't know if you guys figured out that.
I did not.
That trick, but there is another guy you talk to and he tells you like do me me re re do me or whatever, and you gotta translate that to the staff. And if you jump on the tadpoles in the right order as they move along the staff and make the song, then you get I don't know, frog coins or something like that. But it was a cool little...
So upset if I had just gotten frog coins trying to figure all that out.
I don't know. It might have been something better, but...
I definitely pulled that up on the internet and looked at it and was like...
Oh, did you?
I want to do... Oh, yeah. Then I was like, I'm not going to bother doing that. Because I tried it like two or three times and like kind of missed one or two jumps after the joke. Because it takes time. Because a tadpole, you have to sit there and wait for it to move. I think there's seven spots it moves to, and you had to do like, you know... I don't know. It moves at seven, and then you have to do like eight of them or something. Yeah. And it was just like, I missed like two or three. Like at the right the last second, I hit it, and it was like, so I was like, it's not worth it. Whatever, I'm moving on.
A hot tip that I have for that, and I don't know if you guys did it or not, is near the beginning of the game, after you get you take down that, not the crocodile, he's a dinosaur, right? I think. Anyway, if you take him down, get the Grandpa's coin back. If you go back to the item shop in the Mushroom Kingdom, he gives you the frog stick. Oh, no, wait. No, if you go back to see the main tadpole guy after he tells you, okay, go with Mario, you got to go on your adventure. You go back to see him, you give him that whatever he ordered from the shop. then he gives you his staff as a weapon for Mallow, because Mallow's just running unarmed up until that point. You get this staff, it's a huge boost in your attack power and makes him a lot better
before you get his first weapon. Totally defenseless. He can like summon the lightning. So I mean like
he's a big mage character for sure.
I gave him symbols.
Symbols are good. Yeah, but it's before you get the symbols, you can get this frog stick thing, and it's like a wooden stick, like a staff. And it just, it makes his basic attack a lot better. It took me a while to figure that one out, but now I make sure I do that every time.
What do you guys think of the cover art for this?
I love it. It's like nostalgic.
Yeah, kind of busy.
It's my perfect, it's when I think of like Mario, this is like the type of characters that I think of from like being a kid.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So it's in the background, you got, assumed Bowser's castle. It's got a giant sword in it, which is a little off putting, but then it's just Bowser, Peach, Mario. So you can buy this game thinking that it's okay, just, you know, a 3D Mario game. Let's see. Like, it doesn't show any of the new characters on it, right? So it gives you that, okay, it's just a Mario game. Let's see. And that's it, how the game starts off. But some nice surprises in there. I think Bowser joining your party is a big thing. Like, I thought that was the coolest thing in the world, where it's like, oh, you can control Bowser and be Bowser. And I know
Rex and Magneto teaming up.
Yeah. And I know in, was it Mario Odyssey? At the end of that game, you used your hat on Bowser. Right, yeah. And that was another time where I'm like, this is amazing. Uh-huh. Bowser is the best.
So I got to bring this up, and I think this goes to my experience of not having played a ton of Mario games. Like, I wasn't a Mario Kart guy. I wasn't, like, I've played probably a shockingly low amount of Mario games in my gaming history. I didn't know Peach was once Princess Toadstool. And so, like, they're like, Toadstool is talking. I was like, who is that?
Who's
like, where is she?
And was this the last part of that?
See, to me, that's who she always was, and then like became
Mario 64. I think
gave her Peach.
Was she still Toadstool in 64?
64, yeah. Because I think that was the first time I heard it, because she does those letters or whatever, and she's like, "From Peach."
Yep.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm almost positive that's the first usage of it. And what's mind blowing, because I had to look this up, to see when it happened, but it's like, Peach was the Japanese name, and it wasn't until she came over to the West that it became Toadstool. And I was just like, what?
Toadstool makes sense though, right? Because it's a bunch of mushrooms.
Like an ugly name. Like, no offense, Peach, like, you're beautiful, but if you're listening, subscribe. But like, what, like, Peach and Toadstool, like, huh? Anyway.
I'm trying to think in the Mario cartoon, like Super Mario Brothers Super Show. Like, what do they call her in that? I would assume they called her Toadstool, because, like you, Neil, I never heard of her really being called Peach, probably until 64.
Talk about a name that you'd change as soon as you became 18. Like,
well, the other thing is Bowser as well, right? He was King Koopa.
Yeah.
I don't know when he was Bowser in this game, though, right?
He was. So I think in the Super Show, he was King Koopa. They called him or just Koopa. He's called him Koopa.
But those are also the names of those turtle guys, right?
Koopa Troopas.
Koopa Troopas. Yeah. And I remember, I think it's Polish. Koopa means poop. So I had some friends at school that were Polish, and they're like, oh, it's so funny.
Yeah, so the Super Mario Brothers Super Show, it was Princess Toadstool, Toad, and King Koopa. So even at that point, which that ran, well, looking at that, went from, I guess, well, it says released 1989, and they kind of continued to release it, but kind of redo some of the same episodes, but rebrand it. So the Super Mario World Show was in 91. So, you know, figure by the end of 91, 92, the show wrapped. Yeah, so you still had them.
Yeah, his original name was Daimao Koopa, Great Demon King Koopa.
Well,
of course,
which is sick.
Yeah,
well, he's awesome. Yeah,
it's great. I have
I'm always, if I could be Bowser, I'm playing Bowser. Mario Kart, whatever. Smash, Smash Bros. I played a lot of him too. I'm a sucker for the giant animal-like monster guys, if you guys didn't know. My D&D character choices.
That tracks, actually.
Side note, in every role-playing game, tabletop role-playing game we've played, Neil is a anamorphized
same animal. Type of animal.
That's cool.
Never.
I'm a human every day. We, you know,
that's fair. Awesome. Yeah.
That's. I guess that's a good argument.
All right. Anything else on Super Mario RPG? You guys think we missed, or we need to bring up here on the show?
I think I'm gonna try and finish this one. Nice. I put down Mega Man, and I was like, I'm not gonna get back to it. My heart's broken. Oh well. But this, I think it'd be fun to. I can see picking this up and having it be just like a fun de-stressor.
Yeah.
Or just like, oh, I want a game for a few minutes, like doing this.
I love like having like the JRPG kind of in the handheld form, because I played this on the Ambernic, and like to have something on the TV. And I don't want to say that it's mindless, because of course, and especially in this one, you have, you know, a little bit of a story going on. But when you're just kind of going through, kind of grinding just a little bit, you can just, you're sitting there just kind of going through battle to battle to battle. And like, I don't know, it's just something to do. So I think I'm with you too, Matt, where being that I've never finished this game, I think this might be one that I finish at some point. It might not be in the next week or two, but I think I could see myself going back to this for sure. Just kind of wanting to finish
it. I'd like to finish it too. For me, there's a lot going on this week. The Destiny has like a raid gauntlet that's going on, and Hades 2 came out. And so my time has been split between those two things. But I think that I played this more than both of those.
Really?
I played so much of this game this week.
Nice.
I played Hades probably like maybe an hour, you know, every night, but throughout the day and even before, you know, I would sit down at my computer, I was playing Super Mario RPG. So I really want to get the remake, and I'd like to continue this, but I really want to get the remake on Switch and start over and play through that.
Yeah, for me, actually, one more thing I want to talk about is the bosses. I think it was really cool how they had this theme of, and I guess you guys will see it as you go, but the whole thing, Smithy gang, right? You know that the guy's name is Smithy, the main guy. So the giant sword fell out of the sky. The first star boss you fight is a little mini sword. Then you got the bow and arrow, and then you got different things that pop up in that gang, which I thought was pretty neat. When they were first starting the game, they making an RPG, they were going to give Mario like a sword and all this stuff too, and they actually brought it to a vote. I saw on one of the videos I watched, they went to something in Japan. I think it was like a J Jump or Shonen Jump or something like that.
Yeah, it was just like an old school gaming convention.
They're like, so should Mario use like RPG sword and shield weapons? Let's hear it if you wanted to. And they like made people cheer, or like hammers and Koopa shells and stuff. And then everyone cheered louder for that. So that like, all right, that's what it is. Here's our test audience. And so they went with it and gave them all those basic weapons. And I thought that was the way to go, because it kept it kind of kid friendly. And, you know, you're not going to scare away the people that say, oh, RPG, I don't like RPGs, you know? Yeah. So I thought that was pretty cool.
And I think that was spawned from the original meeting between Nintendo and Square, because Neil, I think we might have watched the same thing, because they were talking about when they presented kind of like the visuals to Nintendo of the game, Mario was like riding a horse with a sword and shield, and the guy was like, no, like Mario doesn't have a sword. He uses a hammer, and you know, he's a plumber and all this stuff. So I think it's really cool that not that Mario belongs to the people, but it was just like they sought that input because they respected that opinion enough to do it, which it like nowadays, I don't know if you'd want to or should open that up to the toxic internet fan base on anything.
I bet though, if you did open that up, we would still end up in the same place. Mario would still have his hammer and still be, you know, fireball slinging Mario. It wouldn't be Mario with a sword and shield. Like, it just, I don't know, there's something about Mario that if you were to do a game where he has all that, it just, then it's not Mario. At that point, why bother making it Mario? Like, sure, you can play Smash Brothers and Mario. You could probably pick up an item that is a sword, you know, somehow links, the Master Sword probably falls. It's going to be an item in the game. You're smashing people with it. That's one thing. But to make a game based around that where Mario's slapping armor on and all that just sounds like it would just be a weird, I don't know, it would be such a far
Mario departure. Rabbids.
I mean, it sounds pretty
Yeah, I mean, gun. Mario has a gun, I guess, in Mario Rabbids, yeah.
But he also has a hammer.
I used to think that about, like, the same thing kind of with Kirby. But the first time Kirby sucks up one of those knights and gets a sword,
yes,
like, that was so awesome. So, like, I don't know, maybe it could work.
Give me like a dark and
but see, it make, to me, it makes sense with Kirby though. Like, that is Kirby. Like, he absorbs other things and becomes that. Like, Mario is just, I mean, the only way you could do it is if Mario goes on an adventure that's not in the Mushroom Kingdom and somehow ends up in the, you know, Dragon
Mario's
Kingdom
Cyberpunk
or something like that. And like, if they really want to change it, Mario, that's what you do. You send him somewhere else. Like, he doesn't go down a toilet drain. He goes down a, where does he go, to a fireplace? I don't know. And he goes, fights dragons in there. I don't know. Or a chimney.
Okay, hear me out. Calling back to, like, the question about, you know, would any other developer team up with Nintendo to do something, like, disrupting like this? What studio or, like, game property would you, like, if there were no limits and Nintendo was like, listen, we'll, the best idea, we'll do it and we'll put it in production, what collab would you want to see? Like, would it be like Mario in the Halo universe? Would it, you know, like, anything? What would it be?
I mean, for me, it would probably be something with Metroid, but I mean, we have the Metroid Prime games as a first-person shooter, you know? But, I mean, just that alone was a big deal. Like, what? You're coming out with a first-person shooter Metroid? And it came out great. So, like, that's why I can't wait for Prime 4 to see what that's going to be. But that's still Retro Studios making that game. Like, if you were to take that IP and give it to, you know, the team that made, let's say, like, Dead Space, you know, so you have this Metroid game, you know, and you then you have the themes and just the way that Dead Space plays this, you know, basically sci-fi horror game, which really Metroid essentially is. I mean, you're Samus. Yes, you're somewhat of a super, you're not necessarily a soldier, you're a bounty hunter in Metroid, but like, you're super powered with all these, you know, just this awesome mech suit. To have that, but then layer on top of that the survival horror aspect that like Dead Space brings with it, I think would be, and the visuals of that would just be incredible. So give me that game. Like, that's something I would love to see them do with that property. It would be amazing. I don't know.
For me, it would be a Mario real-time strategy game where you play as Bowser and you're controlling your army of Goombas yes. and Paratroopas and everything. And maybe, like, maybe you're fending off someone trying to take over the Mushroom Kingdom, similar to this, like a third party. You get Mario as a hero in your army or something like that. I think that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, give me Baldur's Gate Mario, where you know, he's, every choice matters, you know, and you get to really dig into the relationship between Mario and Bowser. You know, and, let's see what's going on there.
I was thinking one of either two things, and maybe one of these, maybe the one exists already, but like a Street Fighter, like,
ooh,
just like a fighting game between either like the main Mario universe characters, or like, you know, there's the, or do it, team it up and have it be like Mario versus Street Fighter, or, you know, Nintendo versus Capcom, or, you know, whatever like that.
Less like Smash Bros, cool. though. Right? With like health bars and.
Yes.
And
very
difficult input.
Yes, in the Street Fighter style, not in the Smash Bros.
Health bar.
Or kind of kind of what Tidkins is going with, because I'm replaying Jedi...
Survivor?
Yes, right now. Like a super gritty, in-depth story where it's very much not my Mario. Like, almost unrecognizable. But that'd be like the fun of it. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Where you do your fighting game idea and you really settle the score and you do Nintendo versus Square Enix and it's just Nintendo characters.
There you go.
Yeah.
Or like Warcraft is in there.
Nintendo versus Sega.
And then it's just... That'd be sick. Let's be like, free idea right here, guys. Just send us codes and we'll play it. Or even like the Kingdom Hearts with Mario characters.
I think that would be cool. You have a protagonist that is kind of like the character in Kingdom Hearts who then falls into kind of the Disney world, and this character falls into the Mushroom Kingdom, and then you kind of go through. Or even just make it a Nintendo, you know, so you go to Hyrule and you're, you know, with Link and you know, Zelda, and then you go into space and you're with Samus, and then you go into the Mushroom Kingdom, like just go through either all those Nintendo IPs.
It's either Toad falling into Final Fantasy. Or
just hiding in the corner the whole time.
Or Sephiroth falling into Nintendo.
He would just burn it all down.
Yeah. Burn.
Well, what about a CD Projekt Red, the makers of The Witcher, Zelda? And so it's like them making an open world gritty. When you started saying gritty, that's where I thought you were going with some sort of Zelda, like a Zelda game made by them. And it's just
a Zelda Baldur's Gate. Like if Larian is listening, like holy moly, Zelda's Baldur's Gate. Like, come on.
That'd be great.
Come on.
Just be called Hyrule.
Yeah. You guys are speaking my language.
Wow. Awesome. Well, there you go, guys. That's our discussion on Super Mario RPG Legend of the Seven Stars. You know what? I think last time we wanted to come up with some kind of scale. I don't think we really need a scale. Just would you recommend somebody going back and playing this game? I think that's the big thing. And personally, I would say yes. Yes, 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 yes. What about you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, I think we all said this with Mega Man, that we would keep playing it. We've all kind of said this with Super Mario RPG. So I think we need to keep track of that. And like a year from now, we need to go back and like, all right, like, did we actually
probably not.
And then that's the real score, is was it a game that we actually chose to keep playing throughout the year after we did the podcast? And that's how you know.
There you go.
For me, definitely play it, and definitely for you guys, keep playing through, because the different worlds, different bosses, different abilities you get later in the game, it's very cool, and it just keeps changing and keeping it interesting. Going back on Mega Man, I did... The first part of my week, I kept playing Mega Man, ended up doing all the bosses. I got to the Sigma world, and I don't know, man. As I thought, it got really hard, but I'm sticking with that one, too. This one, I want to finish my play of the remake, so I'll put this on. I'm going back to it.
I would say this is... Like, as probably the most casual gamer of the bunch myself, I would put this on any top 10 list of anybody getting into gaming. I think this is one of those titles that you need to play. Just because of the history of it, and how... And I've said it so many times, how much of a disruptor it was in the gaming world at the time, and gone, like, the sales that it's done from the years on, whether it's, you know, this version or the remake, exposure to the game, I think, envelops so much of gaming culture, that it's like one of those games that should be continued to be talked about.
Nice.
I agree.
All right. Well, like we said, we will be back here with Retro Game Club on May 31st, and we will be talking about The Legend of Zelda Minish Cap over in the GBA. So if you want to be a part of that conversation, go play that game. You got a lot of time. You got a couple weeks now to be getting through that, and that's part of the reason why we're doing that. Whenever we play these longer games, we need to do that. We need to make sure it's on a time where we're going to have a little bit longer to play it, I think, than 1 week. Kind of looking back at us going with this one, we probably should have did that time, but we didn't have the foresight for that. So, but we will be talking about the Minish Cap. Go check that out. And of course, let us know your thoughts on it. Let us know your thoughts on Mario RPG. You can send them to me on Twitter at Mark Turk, M-A-R-K-T-U-R-C. I yesterday put out a tweet about this game. So if you want your comments here on the show, either respond to that tweet or you can email us, theenthuselife@gmail.com. And we will be getting you on the show because it's a club. It's a game club. We want you to be a part of this as well. So be sure to send us your comments to this. So any final thoughts, guys, here before we wrap it up?
Great game.
No.
Yeah. Great game.
It's
great game.
Great game. Great soundtrack.
Great people.
Yes. All right, everybody. Well, thank you again here for tuning into the club. And with that, we'll catch you next time. Later.
Peace.
It's me.